station.
The following is an interview with Mrs. Mary Duncan in a home in Lexington, Kentucky. She was a public health nurse for the Red Cross during the World War I and for 1 year on a special scholarship in Wayne County, after which she served 20 years as a public health nurse in the health department.
This is electronic age.
Well,
you went there when, Mrs. Duncan?
In 1922. And I went from Louisville because the Red Cross was offering some scholarships. Let me see, it was public health scholarships to nurses who had been, I don't know who they offered those scholarships to, but I was a nurse in World War I, and I was a Red Cross nurse because at that time, all of the auxiliary help, nursing help in the Army were Red Cross volunteers. And
that's the period when Mary Breckinridge was in the, didn't she serve in ambulance service or something?
I don't know her history very well because I'm not a Kentuckian.
I see.
I resigned from the Army after I returned to the United States from France and Germany after World War I. I was serving in the Army at Fort Knox. Well, there I decided I didn't want to spend my life as a military nurse in the United States Army. So I resigned at Fort Knox. Well, Fort Knox is very near Louisville. So in order to get a job, I naturally applied to, I had public health nursing in mind. And although, of course, I was not trained specially for that, I thought I would like it. And so I went to the Visiting Nurse Association in Louisville and got a job as a visiting nurse there. And it was there that they told me about the Red Cross offering these public health scholarships to nurses who, it was a year of study at the University of Louisville, and I forget now what they paid me, but they paid me enough to maintain myself for that length of time. And but we had to agree to serve at least a year in the Appalachian Mountains section of Kentucky after we graduated. So when I graduated, I accepted this job in Wayne County as a public health nurse. Well, I think the Red Cross organization down there had some money left over, and it was suggested to them that they employ a Red Cross, a nurse, who would do rural public health. And they could use that leftover money they had collected during the war for war, I guess some kind of war purposes, I don't know. Well, anyway, I know that they bought a car, and I was given that. They didn't give me the car, but I had the use of their car. And then they paid my salary. And I was provided with an office of some sort, you know. But I had to organize. I was completely on my own about what I was to do. Well, from my public health course in Louisville, we were. I was sort of outlined as to how to proceed, and with the help of the local doctors there and the people, I examined school children. And of course, mainly it was minor things like, you know, scabies and head lice and. Throat. But of course, naturally, I discovered serious conditions too. You know, crippled children. And at that time, it seems there was no place to get help for these crippled children like there is now. There was no health department there, and no health officer or anything. I was completely on my own. And, of course, I discovered cases of cancer. If they were people who could pay for it, they would go to Lexington or Louisville and get some special help. But most of the people couldn't go anywhere, and, of course, there was no place to send them where they could get help. They just simply went on and died. And many, and of course, all of the doctors there did home deliveries. Almost all, since there was no hospital there, all of the children were, everybody, all the babies were delivered at home. But I did not deliver any babies. I was not trained to do it. And since the doctors all would do home deliveries, for families who could pay them, I did not feel it. I didn't branch out into home deliveries. Because there are there, in addition to the doctors, there were midwives in every area were midwives. Some were, well, none were trained, but some were quite competent, and they understood the importance, you know, of cleanliness and so on. Others were not at all. And of course, the birth rate was quite high, and well, to cut a long story short, I stayed there. Let me see what I stayed there about a year, and then the money that the local Red Cross chapter had accumulated had run out, and in order to stay longer, we would have had to put on a campaign of contributions from everybody and so forth, and I didn't want to become involved in anything like that. We had a Red Cross nurse from Louisville who would occasionally, I think she was just in Monticello one time while I was there, but anyway, I told her that when their money ran out, I did not want to stay. And she said they had a vacancy in Woodford County, and which was an entirely different environment and so forth, and if I would consider that, she would have me transferred there when my year was up in Wayne County. So she did. So I went to Winford County. But that was not my sole experience I became engaged to this lawyer in the course of this, my year in Wayne County, and of course considered getting married, but it took 3 years before we finally did, and I went back to Wayne County. Well, there was still no health department there. And I really don't know what condition the public health was in there. I guess very much like it was when I left. And let me see, I married in 25. And then my son was born, and I decided, well, there was no job, no nursing job in Wayne County at all, until World War II came along. Well, then everybody became very, health-minded, or maybe they had some more money, I don't know. Anyway, they hired a public health doctor, Dr. Roberts, and maybe you met him.
I've interviewed him, yes, he's a fine person, yeah.
You met him in Wayne County. Well, I did not work under him, but he preceded Dr. Kelsey, did you?
I interviewed him too.
You interviewed him too. He preceded Dr. Kelsey. Well, in 90, then I stayed at home, did not practice until, let me see, 1942. And then there was a vacancy in the health department in Wayne County, and they were wanting a nurse very badly, and I heard about it and applied and went back in the public health field. Well, that was after a interim of about 17 years that I hadn't practiced. And then we had a health officer, and the health department was a state health department. And they had one nurse and a clerk and the health officer. I think that the staff was comprised of the three of us. And the health officer helped me make out a schedule, which was visiting all of the schools during the school year and examining them and giving typhoid and diphtheria and tetanus, typhoid, diphtheria, and tetanus shots to all the children who did not have it, and that was practically every child, because up to that time there had been no program of preventive vaccination in Wayne County, and typhoid was very, very rampant. I mean, every year they would have many cases of typhoid, and not diphtheria, although I guess they could have had the epidemic at any time, but I did not encounter it. I did not. But we gave diphtheria and tetanus shots anyway, and typhoid. Well, and of course these bad throat conditions that I saw so many of, but there was no way to help them in Wayne County. We did not have a surgeon. He did tonsillectomies. And I suppose some of the children of the wealthier people were taken to Lexington or Louisville for tonsillectomies. But I dealt mainly with the more or less indigent families. And from 1942 to 45, we were very much involved in sending soldiers into service, and we did the primary screening. And every week we would, I don't know, I think it was two days a week, we would screen just a lot of, the health officer worked with the draft board, and they would send all of their volunteer draftees to us, and we would look them over first. Well, we would take blood tests of everyone for syphilis, and because those who came back with a positive syphilis test were not sent, and those who were obviously mentally unfit were not sent, and those who were badly crippled, for instance, were not, and those who were blind or deaf or otherwise, that anybody without any special we would just eliminate them. Well, then the other draftees were sent on somewhere to Louisville, I think. Anyway, they were sent in large numbers on certain days for further, more detailed tests by other doctors. And then they were either sent back home, or they were taken into the army. So until the end of the war in 45, we were mainly occupied with that. After that, then we changed our program, and I guess Dr. Kelsey told you about what our programs were.
Yes, right.
At that time.
That's a tremendous story. I wish I'd brought my good recorder. One person I'm trying to find out about, let me see if that recorder's still off. Yeah, it's on. Is Dr. T. Do you remember anything about him? He seemed to have some innovative programs, particularly with the midwives in his tenure.
But he didn't stay there long.
Just a year or two, I think.
Yes. And what year was he there?
I think he preceded Dr. Roberts. Yeah, probably 1930 to 1931 or 1932, yeah.
Oh, well, that was before I went back into nursing, see. So I knew he was there, but I didn't know I don't know anything about his program. And I know that he soon left. He wasn't there long. Dad, did you talk to him?
Oh, no, I wish I could. He's not living now.
He died.
Well, he went on to larger things. I think he went to John Hopkins in public medicine and then preventive medicine. And then he later, I think, became commissioner of public health in the state later on.
Yes, that's true.
I've got the impression that he had a very innovative program.
Well, maybe he did, but I was not the nurse. I was not the nurse at that time, and I don't know anything about it.
You were nursing, but you're nursing your own children.
Yes.
In the home.
Yes, I don't know what they were doing there. And but what was he interested in?
He was interested in public medicine, public health medicine, apparently. I know I've seen a photograph of the group of midwives that he was training. I'm trying to find that photograph. I've seen Dr. Kelsey had it in a little pamphlet. I'd like to find out more about that period. It seems like they may have had a little bit more money and could exercise a little more.
Well, maybe so. I was expected to sort of supervise midwives, well, in a county the size of Wayne County, in those days when the roads were very poor, you know, and there were, oh, I don't know how many midwives. Do you have an idea the number of midwives? How many were in that picture, Dr. T?
Well, there was only 15 or so there, but I have gotten the impression through interviewing people. I've been in some of these areas that you went into among the poor rural people, and I just intuitively, I sensed there must have been an enormous number of them there.
Well, there was, and because people couldn't pay doctors to come, you know, miles and miles over those roads, and they didn't have the money to pay them anyway. And midwives just kind of evolved out of mothers and grandmothers and aunts and women who were in the neighborhood, had perhaps delivered a woman and everything went all right, and then the next woman called her and so on, and pretty soon she was a midwife. And there was no, my supervising them, I visited them, and saw what they had in their bag, and stressed the importance of cleanliness, because tetanus was a great hazard, you know, as well as infection of the mother. And they did not realize how, why they shouldn't insert their hands into the vagina and manipulate the baby and things like that. And outside of teaching them that and seeing that they had the very minimum of equipment like scissors and tape, and teaching them about the necessity for boiling everything that they were going to use and wash their hands and things like that. That was all my supervision consisted of. And of course, the birth records. I had to stress the importance of their reporting their births and what they had to put on that birth, you know, showed them the birth record and the things they had to find out at the time and put on there, and showed them how to fill it out and so forth. And if they couldn't do it themselves, they could find out all the answers, and when they came in, someone would help them do it. And so our health department started. Did you go into the birth record history?
Not yet.
I don't know just when that started.
I think they started. I've read this out of secondary material. I think that the death records started first, and I think the birth records didn't start until about 1918 or so,
1918, 19. So it was really close. Maybe it was under Dr. Teague. Maybe Dr. Teague started that. Anyway, it was Ray was very new when I went there.
That'd be prior to Dr. Teague. It started with you, is what it started with, really. Must have been. I may have been a little earlier.
No, I didn't go there till 22.
22. But see,
and you see, Dr. Kelsey was also already. No.
Are you getting your time?
No, I see.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The first time I went there, there was no health department.
That's right.
It was only when I went back, and there still was not any till I went to work in 42. Well, when the health department was actually organized and established there, was Teague the first health officer?
No. They had a lot of health offices before him, but they were not really, it was not really a full-time job. They were doctors that did.
Oh, the already practicing there.
Yeah, they pay them a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. There was a Dr. Young that was doing that when I first went there.
Do you remember him? He's an interesting character.
Yes, I remember Dr. Young. That's right. I'd forgotten that he did sort of, I think, mainly keeping death and birth records is what. People would report them to him, but they were very incomplete. And that's right. I'd forgotten. They had that type of health officer. And what he did, actually, I don't know. He didn't attempt to. To help me plan a program when I went there. He had a private practice, country practice, and in addition, he was supposed to be a health officer. But what he did actually, birth reports, they took them to him, but did he keep them in his office or in the court?
Probably.
Did you ever see any of these old records?
No, but I'm going to. I've seen some. Elizabeth has some, and she showed me some, and very interesting, very interesting. And I found out that might jog your memory a bit. It seemed that the system was, for indigent care in the earlier years, a doctor would report that this family needed medicine, medicinal substances, or they needed whatever they needed. They would report that to the physical court. The physical court would allow a little money to do that, or the doctor would do it, and then they would pay them.
Oh,
so
I see.
That's an interesting system, and I want to get into that. Apparently, that was the old traditional, conventional way of doing it, and I feel that the health offices earlier, in quotes, that's sort of the role they played. They kind of were the contact.
They were the supposed to take care of the poor,
that's
and
right.
The fiscal court paid them for what they did.
I think that's what, I don't know yet. As I interview more people and look at the records, I think it's beginning now, the system beginning to crystallize. But it's people like you that can help so much. You have helped so much already.
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking back at after World War II, of course, there was typhoid fever in the county, just about the way it was when I went there in 22. And people knew it was contagious, and they knew it came from bad water too. I mean, they knew it came from contaminated water, I think. But there was no way of that they knew of avoiding it. And of course, I didn't either. Of course, you could teach, you could go in a home where there was a case of typhoid and you could tell the family, now this is infectious and the rest of you can catch it. And the way you catch it is by putting the germs, getting the germs on your hands or on the food that you eat and putting it in your mouth. And wherever he got it, and of course they had their own ideas about where he got it. Maybe he got it from another case where he'd been, you know, visiting or something. Or maybe they would attribute it to a spring. Well, all I could tell them was about the hand washing and but the all the linen on their bed, they're boiling, and they're keeping all of their dishes separate and things like that in order to prevent the spread to another member of the family or someone taking care of him. But even so, there were many cases of spread from one person to another, and I presume, in fact, there were carriers too, you know. They would suddenly come up with a case, they had no idea where they got it. Well, they had caught it from a carrier, someone that had carried it for 20 years or so and spread it around. Well, my main hope, and I knew that it was not in, it's going to be awfully hot in here if we don't keep that open. So we concentrated on typhoid immunizations, and I gave thousands and thousands of typhoid immunizations. We gave them free to anybody who came to the health office. And of course, all members of all contacts of cases would get them. And all school children got them. The regular three shot, you know, so they were safe. And typhoid in my regime there, which was 20 years. I worked from 42 to 63. Typhoid disappeared completely from Wayne County. In fact, they were talking then of, well, it's not necessary to give typhoid shots because we never see a case anymore. And that is true. I guess now they don't give it. And of course, the smallpox. I would give smallpox, but there was one diagnosed case of smallpox that I saw. They said it was smallpox, and I guess it was. And then there was tuberculosis, was another big steward of the time, and of course it was throughout the state. These big TB hospitals were built around the state, you know. The one nearest us was at London, I believe.
It went to Glasgow too, didn't it?
Yes, but London was was the one we were supposed to take our cases to. And everybody that would agree to go, of course they were not, I don't think they were forced to go, but that was their only hope, was to go to these hospitals. And once they went there, they had to stay about 3 years, you know. It was before streptomycin came along, and many of them died anyway, despite the fact they were in the hospitals. But there they had the opportunity of complete isolation and complete rest, which they could not get at home. In most cases, they could not get at home. And then, I don't know. I don't know when streptomycin came along, but and it was after after I left. That long ago.
Certainly. You need a little time to think upon it and recall.
Well, to review work that long ago, it's hard to do.
Sure.
But I remember the things, I remember that we had tuberculosis. That was one of our great scourges. And it wasn't until after streptomycin came along that very much a very great difference was noticeable.
Scarlet fever seems to have been among the people who talk a lot about it being so hard.
Yes, we had scarlet, yes, we had scarlet fever. Scarlet fever, of course. Many children died of scarlet fever. And it was a childhood disease, early childhood. The children that I saw that died of scarlet fever were all even preschool age. But the antibiotics took care of that. Just as soon as antibiotics came, then scarlet fever was whipped, because the doctors had something they could work with. And they diagnosed it and gave these antibiotic shots. They had that.
How about whooping cough?
But, whooping cough, of course, was rampant. And they had the whooping cough and a toxin too, I think. And I didn't see any deaths from whooping cough. And whooping cough was not considered a fatal disease. It was something like measles. It was a bad thing to have, but it wouldn't kill you, you know. Occasionally, I guess it went into pneumonia or something, but it was not considered fatal. It was more of a nuisance disease considering the others down there that they had to contend with. Then polio came along. Well, all the time during my training years, I never saw polio. I'd heard of it, but I thought it was such a rare thing. But suddenly, in Wayne County, every spring and summer, there were cases of polio. And the doctors didn't know what to do about it, and they didn't know where it came from, and they're rather helpless about it. But every year we'd have a crop of crippled children, and of course they more or less crippled, sometimes just an arm, sometimes very badly, both legs, you know. That was the age when you could see children in braces and crutches and things like that all over the place. And then Salk came along with his Salk vaccine, you know, for polio. Well, I thought that was a godsend because I dreaded to see spring and summer come. I knew we were going to have many children with polio. And polio, then that paralysis, that was a lifelong disability. And so I welcomed this Salk vaccine, and we put on a very thorough and comprehensive program of immunizing everybody, not only children from 6 months on, but adults, and everybody got it.
How did you do that? Did you go work through the local schools or bring them into town?
Well, we put on a campaign and went into every locality. It was usually a school, and we invited everybody in that locality to come. And of course, the Salk vaccine was there. You know, at first we had these, you had to give shots, you know. And when we gave shots, I think it was confined just to the children. But when these drops, the Salk vaccine came along, and these drops where you just drop two or three drops on the tongue, that was so easy, everybody volunteered for it. And that just wiped out polio completely out of Wayne County. There was no polio. That was like a magic wand. I tell you, whoever this Dr. Salk certainly deserves a lot of credit. Well, those things happened during my regime there. We got rid of typhoid, and then of course tuberculosis, and we got rid of polio, and then the antibiotics got rid of these venereal diseases. We had two special days a week that we set aside for venereal cases to come to the health office for treatment. And before antibiotics came along, it was a long, tedious, you know, syphilis, for instance, was a very long, tedious process and very uncertain as to its results, too. And the same way with gonorrhea. But the antibiotics simply took care of that beautifully, right? And until, well, I think even when I left there, however, the health officer was prepared to treat venereal diseases who were indigent and came to him. He could give.
Excuse me, Mrs. Duncan. I'm supposed to have already picked up my wife at the university. I'm going to be in trouble. I really came over thinking I could make an appointment with you, and I didn't realize you had been so helpful. There's some other questions I'd like. I'd like to know, for instance, what staff you had to do all this work, like in the polio campaign, the vaccine campaign you did. Did you have a little larger staff?
No. I had some volunteer help.
Uh-huh.
You know, to keep the books, and then the health officer and myself and our clerk, that was all the staff we had.
Good grief.
I know we did a lot of work, and it was very effective as to
Let me see. Would you?
On both, you see.
Oh, I see.
Then this is the stop. It says stop. You just push that. Push that.
Where? I was employed by the Kentucky State Health Department as County Public Health Nurse of Wayne County from the years 1942 to 1963, a period of 21 years. In that, our staff consisted of the of a doctor who was public health officer of three counties and spent only 2 days in Wayne County. Sometimes three, depending on the load of our work. In the course of that 21 years, we moved from two rooms over the drugstore on Main Street to a more elaborate layout in the new courthouse. And later, to our own county public health building on the south edge of town, where we had ample parking space and room for expansion. In addition to myself, the public health officer, the clerk, and a clerk, two sanitarians in time were added to our staff. They had a regional supervisor who visited occasionally. We had annual public health state public health department meetings in Louisville, where all of the counties that had public health departments met. We were not forced to attend these meetings, but we were urged to. The public health officer always did, and I did, and the nurse and the clerk. Usually, there we made reports. And we were briefed on the new laws that had been passed by the legislature, or perhaps in Washington, affecting our program. For instance, in 1952, when the Supreme Court abolished the Equal but Separate Act, segregating the colored children, that had a tremendous effect upon my program in the schools of Wayne County. I remember it well because one teacher of a little isolated country school had a family of colored children in her area, in her district, who were furnished books by the school superintendents, and the mother attempted to teach these children as best she could. Because they were so isolated, there was no possible colored school near them they could attend. And it so happened that just as soon as the Supreme Court published the abolishment of this separate but equal act, she invited these children to come to her school. And it also so happened that she did that entirely on her own, without asking the county superintendent. She knew it was right, knew it was right. She knew she was right. She did not wait for precedence. She simply invited those children to come, and it so happened that all unprepared, I wandered into that school a few days later, and there they were. These little black faces, fuzzy hair, short fuzzy hair, or little tight braids sticking out from their heads with ribbons on them, sitting very neat and clean and well behaved, and studying very earnestly, and the other children not paying any attention at all. Took them in their stride. But I never will forget the shock, the sight of those children in that, sitting there in those seats, gave me. And I looked at the teacher, and she told me that she did not wait, that she implemented the Supreme Court action concerning these children at once, and all on her own. I congratulated her. I did not know that this national magazine Look would come down and take pictures, and she would have the honor of being the first one to include colored children into her school entirely on her own. She is living there in Wayne County now. And one son, maybe two, are dentists there. Of course, I worked largely through the schools. And one, Ira Bell, for the entire period of my employment, over 21 years, was county superintendent of public schools. A graduate of Eastern State College. A very able, very political minded. Just as soon as the FDR social acts went into effect, he seized on as many as he possibly could for the benefit of our county, WPA. WPA, I remember particularly because he built the high school with WPA labor. And he made no and built roads. We did away entirely with toll roads. And toll roads we done away with entirely. And good public and good roads, good graded, not blacktop, but at least hard rocks. Good roads, good graded and rocks roads were built to not all sections, to the principal sections of the county radiating out from Monticello. Then the 72 small one-room schools in the county that existed when I first went to work were quickly consolidated. The roads made that possible, and busing came into existence. Soon the schools were reduced to about 30. I think there was probably 30 schools and only one high school where there had been at least three in the county before. And of course, Medicaid made it possible for them to establish a social service department, whereas I had been doing what social service work was done in the county was included in my program. How glad I was. But still, at that time, the state health department was divided into divisions, each with a head. Actually, I don't know what the structure, I never knew. And its structure changed so frequently that I couldn't keep up with it. But I know that there was a Department of Public of there was a Department of Tuberculosis with its TB specialists at the head. There was a mental health division. Which looked after all of the mental health hospitals in the state, the retarded, and then the drugs, the sedatives, and drugs came into existence treating the mentally ill. And they were kept at the hospital a short time and then sent home. And as they came home, they were referred to me to follow them and to make reports on them, which I did. The load for one public health nurse in Wayne County was tremendous. We worked 6 days a week from 8 to 4. All the new hours, 5 days a week, 39 hours, 5 days a week, or 39 hours, 5 days a week, came later. When I left in 63 to retire, the wife of another trained nurse in Monticello, the wife of the local paper, The Outlook, Mrs. Simpson, took my place, and I believe she is still there. One of the sanitarians, also retired, Paris Bowles, is also living there. And he could fill you out on much along the lines of public sanitation. As it grew, and as it grew in Wayne County, a very big subject. We had two sanitarians, very big subject, because we, Lake Cumberland, we had springs that were being used, sometimes by the schools. Even our city water was established sometime during that period. It was only we had a town spring, and everybody else that did not carry water from the town spring had individual wells in their yard. We had no sewer system, of course. water from those wells was always suspect. The clerk in Ruby Rankin worked with me for the greater part of the time during this 21-year period, at least the last 15 years, at least the last 15 years. Was a very important, she knew person, because she kept the records, made reports, wrote the letters for the public health office, for the health officer, and for myself. She knew, kept the birth and death records up to date. She knew better than most of us what was going on, because she was the clerk for the sanitarians, as well as myself and the health officer. She kept visiting days, kept a record of visitors, what they came for. And so forth. A very important person. After my retirement, I have lived, since my retirement, I've lived on Social Security and pensions established for employees, state employees, pensions.